My name's Steve, I'm an addict. It's fantastic to be here. I never ever thought I'd say it was fantastic to be anywhere ever again at one time. It was great to hear you, Marvely. There was some identification as soon as you began talking. Quite early in my using, I was in a squat not far from Dalston. Then I was born in the year of the monkey.
Oh, wow. Brilliant.
There was other stuff, but I was too busy thinking about me, which is the reason I come here, to try and stop thinking about me. I've been coming in for a while now. In fact, on Sunday I'll celebrate 8 years. Wow. And the last couple of months, it started to seem like I've been coming here for a while, and it's taken on, you know, that more will be revealed stuff, you know. About a week before Christmas, I heard a joke on the radio, and it was nothing to do with what we do here, but it really summed up why I used. It was about this couple in the supermarket, and they're walking down the alcohol aisle, and the fella leans over and he grabs a case of Stella, and she said, "What do you think you're doing?" He said, it's a bargain, 24 cans for a tenner." She went, "Put it back." So he put it back. They go down the next aisle. She picks up this bottle of face cream, 20 quid. He said, "What do you think you're doing?" She said, "Makes my face look beautiful." He said, "So does my Stella." And that sums up what drugs done for me. Changed my perception of reality. Sitting on my own, and I could not stop laughing. And that's the thing I love about coming here, the laughter of identification, because, you know, I felt alone for so long. I've been having a different look at things recently. Just, it's that more will be revealed stuff. You know, from a young age, what I wanted for me and what my family, my parents wanted for me were two completely different things. You know, whatever they wanted, I wanted something different. And I don't know why, but that's how it was. You know, I had a will of my own. That's what it was. I didn't know that's what it was. My dad was a copper, and he was quite big. I'm probably about the same size as he was, at his biggest now. And he fired a life out of me at times, but he was like one of them old school. When we moved, when I was young, we lived somewhere else, and we moved to Ilford. And he used to work at East Ham, and nothing he liked more than a bit of overtime over West Ham on a Saturday afternoon. He loved the row. He used to put his Dr. Martins on and shoot over there, and I used to watch the match of the day, and I'd see him, he'd be an off, and he'd go. and I almost, you know, if I hadn't have found drugs, I probably would have become a football hooligan. That was quite appealing at that time. My dad's been dead a long time, and I hadn't seen him for years before he died, but I kind of feel like I've got to know him better since I've been here. I found out, I don't know why I never knew before, he was always a functioning alcoholic. I think, it's almost compulsory in his job in them days, I think. You know, that's what they did. Anyway, so I didn't want to be what they wanted me to be. And I think his fear was I would become something different, and I became something different again. And I used to meet him in the pub every now and then, just to go and see him. And he said to me, "Do you still take drugs?" I said, yeah, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Everyone does. And that's what I thought. You know, I thought, from when I started drinking and then using, I always thought that everybody was doing what I was doing. I now know, when I was at school, I used to bunk off because I didn't want to be what they wanted me to be. I went to grammar school and I used to bunk off with the kids from the local secondary modern, a couple of them who never went to school. And I thought they were really bad. They all got married and normal jobs. I never. It was me. I was the strange one. You know, I thought, you know, I would drink initially on a mission. And I thought everyone was doing what I was doing. I can go in a pub today for a bit of lunch and it amazes me. I see people drinking normally. People talking. I could never see that. I was speaking to a woman the other day, a similar age to me. And I said to her, "So you weren't a hippie then?" And she went, "Well," and she went on to describe what she liked, how she dressed. And that was what I thought was a hippie. She said, "But I never took pot." And I thought, wow. A hippie that didn't. I thought, I missed all that. I thought you had to go and get as out of your head as you could. And that was it, you know. I thought I was on an alternate lifestyle. I was an alternate to normality. And you know, my using went on for a long time, and probably longer than. Well, no, it went on for as long as it needed to. It went on until I got here, really. I was listening to a woman share last Thursday, and she took me to places I'd never quite. I've been to them, but I saw the depth of my self-centeredness from a new perspective. She was talking. She'd lost her son. She was talking about some stuff, and it took me to. When I was just after I was 19, I got run over on the A13. I'd had a handful of pills and a bottle of whiskey. And I got run over, and the message my mum got, she got a knock on the door from the police, and they said, told her what had happened. They said, "You don't have to rush, he's not going to live." Now, 2 years later, on my 21st birthday, I'm back doing everything. Well, I was back doing everything I was doing in a very short space of time. 2 years later, on my 21st birthday, I've had a big row with my sister, who hasn't spoken to me since. I've upset everything. And at that time, my mum's marriage was breaking up. You know, and all I could think about was me, and what I wanted, what would be good for me. And I had no idea what would be good for me. You know, I might have to revisit some of my amends and just, you know, give people the chance to tell me what I was really like again. You know, I've done lots, but you know, more will be revealed, and that's my experience. I didn't really care what I used, you know. I drank first. I was soon taking pills. When I found barbiturates, that was heaven. They allowed me to tell you to fuck off. You know, tell you what I thought of you. I had lots of consequences for that. But the thing was, I never felt the consequences. You know. I spent a long, long time doing mushrooms every day. Because I thought that was cool. You know, just listening to the wall. Repeatedly. For weeks on end. And the thing was, it was on a tape. And it was taped the wrong way round, so we weren't even listening to it in order.
Yeah.
I sometimes, there's another friend of mine who, he gets in touch every now and then, and if, I think he's going to ask me for help, We go back a long way. My first hospitalisation was, he came to the pub, he was about 14, I was about 16, 17, and he nicked his mum's Valium, and he said, "Yeah, want some of these?" So he gave me half, and I just swallowed it. Anyway, I never made it home, I fell asleep somewhere, they took me in and pumped my stomach. Anyway, he came round, I think it was last week or the week before, and he went, he said, "I always looked up to you." I thought, "You probably have got this then." He said, "I'm sure a few of us did." And I thought, "No, you're not well." he said, "I find it really hard to believe you had a problem with self-esteem." Yeah. I hope he gets here one day. It's great that he keeps in touch. Yeah. So, yeah, using was, it was funny at times, but it wasn't often fun, you know, not looking back. But it was the only thing that kept me going till I got here. You know, I didn't have a clue. When I got here, towards the end of my using, I started to run into people who said, "You're in trouble. You need to ring this number." And I didn't know what that number was. But eventually, I rang that number, and that was how... And I rang that number, and I got into a place where, in order to be there, I had to stop using. And I needed to stop using, but my real problem was I just couldn't manage my life anymore. I spent all day, every day, wishing I was dead, you know. All day, every day. You know, yeah. Anyway, so I got in somewhere and I stopped using. And then I went off to a treatment centre and I stayed not using. And I came out of there and I came back to London and I started coming to meetings. But I didn't know what was wrong with me. But once I came to my first meeting, I just kept coming. And recently I've spent quite a lot of time with a friend who's been in and out. And I've seen why they tell you to keep coming back. They told me to keep coming back, and I kept coming back because I didn't have anywhere else to go. But at times I thought, why are they saying that? But from seeing someone else, what can happen? And then reflected on my experience, because if I hadn't kept coming back, I would never have found out what was wrong with me. You know, I would never have found out, because I wasn't going to find out there, that's for sure. I didn't find out in some of the other places I'd been, you know. And, you know, there was a young woman I'd been in treatment with, and I would ring her. And she'd say, "Are you doing 90 and 90? And I thought, I can't even answer. I'm just doing from day to day what I need to do. You know, and you know, I wasn't in any position to make any decisions. I was absolutely beaten. You know, I know that now. My sponsor said to me, "You can tell people who are fully conceived by what they do." And what I did, I kept coming here till I found out what was wrong with me. You know, I was beaten. I heard people talking and saying they'd surrendered. I thought, well, I'm here, I must have surrendered. I actually wasn't able to surrender because I didn't know what the enemy was. I had to find that out first, you know. And, yeah, I was getting progressively worse for 20 months of coming to meetings with no solution. You know, I was completely mad. You know, I was petrified. You know. But the thing was, it says in this book about step two, you know, we can utilise that power long before we know what it is. And that's what I found out later was going on, you know. So there was some other stuff that happened. I had somebody sponsor me for a while, and bless him, I don't even know if he comes to meetings anymore, but as far as I know he's not using. And you know, it wasn't making any sense to me, but again, I didn't use. But I reached a point, I think it was in October 2002, I let go of him, and I thought, I'll do what I did the first time, have a good look round, become too scared to ask anyone else. But fortunately, the following Saturday I was in a meeting in Marchmont Street, and I heard this fella share, and I'd heard him share in September on his 9th birthday, and I really identified with the stuff he talked about, how he felt. Right? I didn't really care about what his using was, because I'd heard lots of that and I knew I used, but he talked about some stuff about how he felt, and I identified with that. Anyway, I made a decision. And actually, I thought the first decision I ever acted on was step three, but there was a couple of others, and this was one of them. I made a decision to ask him to sponsor me, and I had to wait for him to finish a conversation after the meeting, and I was like a scared little boy. Well, I was a scared little boy, and I kept thinking, oh, I'm going to have to go. This is too hard waiting. Anyway, I waited, and I asked him, and he asked me a couple of questions, and he asked me why did I want him to sponsor me. I said, I want you to take me through the steps. And he said, oh good. He said, some people ask because they know I can get things. He said, but I can see you're not young and trendy. And there began a long and fruitful relationship. But he, the first thing he did, he told me to go away and read some literature. Now, I'd got a book a long time before, but it never, ever occurred to me to read it. I thought, you know, I need all the paraphernalia to be in this. And actually, I didn't know this was on the inside till I heard him share about it. Many books have been written about the nature of addiction. This book primarily concerns itself with the nature of recovery. If you are an addict and have found this book, please give yourself a break and read it. So. And that's hidden away, just inside the front cover. I was... spent my life looking for something, and it was always in front of me, I just couldn't see it. So anyway, I read some literature and I started to kind of just to realise that maybe I was in the right place. I identified, and lo and behold, there's a solution to my problem. As I say, I progressively got worse without my old solution, which was no longer working anyway by the time I got here. You know, I wasn't really aware of this till fairly recently, that the first time since before I can really remember that I had any conscious contact with God, as I understand it, or understood it at that time, was when I hit my rock bottom. When I hit my rock bottom, there was nothing there but God. And I asked for help. And I didn't really know that's what I was asking, but my experience now tells me that's what happened. And I ended up here, you know. Within a very short time of I I heard people that had experience of 12-step fellowships, 12-step meetings, Narcotics Anonymous, you know, and I started to hear a new language. It seemed like nonsense. But then I spent my life talking nonsense, so I thought I'll be at home. Actually, that's not true. I didn't feel at home. But as I say, I didn't have anywhere else to go. You know, I came here beaten, didn't know what was wrong with me, but I never ever looked for the solution where it used to be. That tells me I was beaten. And anyway, so I've got this new sponsor who, he's fantastic. I don't often talk about him because he doesn't need me to talk about him, but he's been fantastic, you know. I don't know where I'd be without him. He made it so, he shared his experience with me and told me that if I wanted what he got, I had to do what he'd done. And that's what I've tried to do, you know. So I had an unmanageable life, but I had no idea that I was powerless. I had no idea. And actually, when I came here, maybe I thought I wasn't, you know. Maybe I thought I'd chosen not to use at that time. But I found out about being powerless, that I had absolutely no power when I took first one of anything. I had no power to stop. I could stop sometimes, but I had no power to stay stopped. That was quite a relief. It was quite a relief. So, and as I say, then I mentioned step two. Step two. I was asked a question, and it's in that book. Quite simple question. Was I now willing to believe in the possibility that there might be something greater than me? And I was, you know, and that kind of told me, for the first time, I wasn't God. Because I'd been God forever. I was born God. I knew best. I always knew best. And my knowing best had nearly killed me many times. You know, it nearly killed me many times, and it got me wanting to die, ultimately. I was definitely. And also, my experience told me that from coming here and connecting with people like yourselves, a power greater than me that I wasn't using. You know, I'd have to come daily, not to use, to get enough power to stop me using until the next day, until I found something, somebody who could show me the way. So I was, step two, fantastic. And then, before I got into step three, I happened to hear my sponsor share about step three. And at the same time, I also read something different about it. And I didn't understand that it was a decision that I had to make. It wasn't anything else. It was a decision I had to make. And at that point, I think I was ready to surrender. I was ready to surrender my will and my life to God as I understood him. And in order to do that, well, I found somebody I trusted to show me what I needed to do. And I set about doing it. And set about doing it willingly. I was honestly able to admit defeat. I was open-minded at last to the possibility that I wasn't all-powerful. And I'd become willing to allow somebody to guide me. I can often be take too much credit, and when I talk about my sponsor and say we've worked together, well, we worked together, but what he's really done is I've allowed him to sponsor me. That's the truth. So I took inventory and I went and shared it with my sponsor, and I believe God was in the room. And there were three of us. It wasn't just me and my sponsor. It was another God. And I went away and looked at what I'd done. And what I'd seen was everything in my inventory, I was the problem. Until I began this process, everything wrong in my life was your fault. It was all about somebody else. Nothing was my problem or my fault. I began to get a different perspective on my life. And I believe at the same time my spirit began to awaken. From there on, it was about getting busy, really. I got a bit of an understanding of 6 and 7, but it's grown and grown. 6 and 7 for me are the most important things I do on a daily basis. They're the most important part of my step 10, because I have to be ready to have all these defects removed. In my step 4 and 5, I identified the exact nature of my wrongs. And I'm it. I'm self-centred to the core. I'm selfish. I don't think about anybody else. I haven't got time to think about anybody else. I'm too busy thinking about me. That's what I had to use. It's the only thing that could stop me. Or, I was thinking about this today. I'm not sure whether it stopped me thinking about myself or stopped other things from interfering with me thinking about myself. That might be the one. I need to be entirely ready to have these defects of character removed. And I have to remain ready. I have to be alert. I have to be aware. And step 7, I need to take action to change things. I say a prayer. I said it a couple of times sitting here. But that prayer, it allows me to get tuned in, to get my channels set up on the right wavelength. So I don't know what's going on, but I have something working for me. A few months ago, I got quite frustrated. I've been in 2 step 10 meetings, and I went away and I thought, there's something not right. Something not right. And I was hearing about people writing step 10s. I was hearing about that. But I was hearing the same stuff coming up day after day. I went back and I reviewed what I did. I thought, I need to change. It's not good enough for me just to be writing down the same thing day after day and asking for God to remove it. I have to take action to change things. For me, step 10 begins when I wake up. And it doesn't stop till I go to sleep. Sometimes I wake up and I remember something. I didn't mention I'm powerless and I'm unmanageable. I've got an allergy to drugs. I just thought I'd mention that. So it says it in the newcomer pamphlet. Frankie pointed that out to me a couple of days ago. In case anyone's in doubt, what's wrong with us? I'm allergic. So step 11, I spent a long time sitting on my arse. It was actually when I fell on my face that I got in conscious contact with God. What I need to do is get myself up and do something. I do have quiet time, but the time I find when I'm closest to God is when I'm working with another addict or other addicts. When I'm being of service, that self-centered nature of mine has to be countered. It has to be countered, or I will use. You know, I will drive myself fucking nuts, and using will be the only thing that I know. And I'll forget that it doesn't work anymore. I'll forget. So, well, I forgot what I was going to say at the beginning, you know. But the thing about sharing the longer is it's okay, you can remember and tell people what you were going to say. I used to go back and tell people I was going to ask you to sponsor me, but I was too scared. Tell them next time I saw them. There's a few people in this room who are in the same line of sponsorship as me. There are a few people I sponsor. There are a few members of my home group and people that attend my home group. You know, I didn't know anything about a home group. And then when I was, three and a half years clean, I started doing some work. And I could have slipped away a little bit. I did lose a little bit of contact. And my sponsor told me, he said, don't let work become your primary purpose. There's plenty of people that work in the field you're in who think that's enough. That is their recovery. And I heard that. And I got connected to a group, and I've been with that group probably 4 years. And what I found was a group of people who want to do the same thing as me. You know, the primary purpose, carry this message. You know, I don't come here for anything else. I thought I was coming here to get something. I thought I was coming here to get well. Suggestions. I should have a suggestions box for how that might work. Thank you. Get well. Get well soon. By the time I finished going through the steps initially, I still couldn't hear very well. And I remember my sponsor saying to me, I was going to share, and he said, do you know why you came here? There's only one thing you come here to get. That's the spiritual awakening as a result of working these steps. I know that now. You know, and practice these principles. Carry this message. Sometimes I get annoyed with people banging on about the newcomer. The newcomer's really important, but all the literature says the still suffering addict. That's all of us. I've still got this disease. You know. The newcomers are great, they bring fresh blood in and they're great. But it isn't all, you know, we're all still, I speak for myself, I'm still suffering. You know, I've still got a disease. It's manageable today as long as I do this. So that's what I came here to get, and I didn't know till I got there. What a gift. I'm going to read a paragraph. I read this last night. There's loads of paragraphs in this step 12 in the It Works How and Why that I could read, but this is one. Helping others is perhaps the highest aspiration of the human heart, and something we have been entrusted with as a result of a higher power working in our lives. We would do well to remember to ask the God of our understanding to continue working through us in our efforts to carry the message. Diligently practicing the principles of recovery will ensure that the connection between ourselves and our higher power remains open, and that our service to others is firmly rooted in spirituality. I think early in my using, especially when I found psychedelics, I thought I was, you know, me and God, we met then, man. Somewhere on the dark side of the moon. Me, God, and Sid Barrett. But I can't remember what I was going to say now. That's Sid's interfering. So spirituality. A friend of mine who comes here sometimes, he rang me today to congratulate me. And we were talking about something, and we got onto that thing about finding yourself. And I said, we were kind of laughing about the people who go to India to find yourself. That's what I had to do. And I said, I've been on the bus to Crystal Palace this morning. Do you know what? I was there all the time. I've just had a pie and mash with myself. It's a bit like looking for God. I never knew God wasn't lost. God was in exactly the same place as he always was. It was me that was lost. Step 12 is the greatest gift I ever had. Practice these principles in all our affairs. You know, what I learn in here, I have to do out there. It's no good me coming in here and sounding all well. I have to do it out there. I have to do it out there. That's where it counts. People, if I go out there and I'm like a lunatic, and they say, that guy's a ghost in Narcotics Anonymous, that can't work. I have to practice these principles in all my affairs. It's been really good to be here. I love this fellowship. I love addicts. Nobody else understands me. I'm having a problem at work at the moment with another member of staff. I don't know if they know, I haven't told them, but I'm having a problem. I think they guessed. But I find it really difficult. I'm okay here. I leave it there. Thank you very much.